and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Writers Toolshed. I'm your host, Richie Billing, and today we're back with another hearty dose of fantasy writing inspiration, this time looking at the jobs and the occupations that we see crop up in fantasy stories. Many of these jobs find their inspiration from the medieval period. So we're welcoming back our resident historian, Aidan Mattis, from the Law Lodge podcast for a chat about how people made their coin back in the day, from blacksmiths to bards. It's a fascinating subject, and it's one I'm sure is going to give you a bunch of ideas. I got absolutely loads. So before we plow on, just a quick reminder that if you haven't already done so, I'd be very, very grateful if you could subscribe or follow the show. Episodes go out on the 14th and the 28th of each month. So if you subscribe, you're not going to miss a single one. If you appreciate what we're doing, it would mean an awful, awful lot if you left us a quick review on iTunes or a rating on the Spotify mobile app. It takes just a few seconds, but the impact is huge. Firstly, it tells us we're doing something right, so we'll keep on making more content for you to enjoy. And secondly, it helps other people discover the show, which is only a good thing. Speaking of which, if you know of anyone who may find this podcast useful, please do tell them about it. A quick share on social media is absolutely amazing. Even just a copy an email, the link into an email and send it to someone that you may think useful. If you're in any writing groups too, sharing it with them, it would be amazing. We don't get any money for what we do. Everything we do is purely done out of an innate desire to help other people, I suppose. And the main way that we promote and get the show out to the thousands of listeners that we have is through word of mouth. If you'd like to get more help beyond the podcast, do check out our Patreon page. There's stacks of writing classes and resources, as well as books, and they're all focused on fantasy, so it's the perfect place to do a little bit of extra learning. The links for everything you can find in the description. And now let's crack on with the show and dive into the roles and the jobs we so often see in the fantasy genre. I think there's a bit of a misconception in fantasy that everyone who wasn't a king or a lord in the Middle Ages was a farmer. And yet there was the odd smith, usually that super talented one that lives out in a tiny little village making horseshoes all day but can put together a hell of a blade. But we don't really see a wide range of occupations in the genre. So for inspiration, I think we can turn to medieval life and there's a lot we can reap. So we've discussed a bit about the lives of peasants during the medieval time and we looked at farming mostly, but I was curious about the other jobs that people performed in society and what prospects did they have. And to help us do that, I'm delighted to welcome back Mr. Aidan Mattis. Aidan, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm getting the evil eye from my dog because he hasn't been out in a few hours. But,
oh no, mine's faster.
After this, buddy.
got some medieval occupations to discuss first. So what was it like then in the medieval period? Because obviously most people are peasants, aren't they? So you're born onto a small farmstead, you're expected to work the land. But what other jobs, what other prospects have you got in medieval life?
So one major misconception about the Middle Ages is that people seem to think that there was something of a caste system where you were born into a certain sect of society and then you weren't really able to get out of it. In reality, it was much more similar to what we have today, where the way to get out of your socioeconomic class is to simply have the money to do something else. You know, a lot of the way that society in Europe was kind of always structured was that at the top you have your king or whoever your monarch was. And then directly below them, you would usually have your warrior class or your priest class. Those tended to be either equal or one was directly above the other. But those were usually the top two classes of society after the monarch and the royal family. Beneath that, you would have the artisan class, people who were blacksmiths and barbers and, maybe like an innkeep, something like that, like brewers. And then the majority of the population, the vast, vast majority of the population would be peasant farmers. But it wasn't, and that goes back all the way to like ancient Celtic society. Hill forts would actually be structured in such a way that you would have very visible, what is the word that I'm trying to think of? You would be able to see based on where in the city somebody lived, what their class was. And I think a great example of this, a time that it was done really well, is in Skyrim. If you've ever played the game, one of the running jokes is when you go to Whiterun, you'll be walking through the kind of lower districts. And of course, outside are all the farms. And then as you get up into it, there's the artisans, there's the inn. And you'll run into this guy, I think his name's Nazim, if I remember correctly. And he says, do you get to the Cloud District often? Oh, what am I saying? Of course you don't. And then you go up to the Cloud District, and that's where the more aristocratic families and the priest and all these different groups live. And then, of course, at the top of the hill, you've got the Jarl. So they did such a good job. That is so accurate to how it actually would have been. Of course, they're behind stone walls instead of a Celtic hill fort, but you get the point. So that was kind of the way that society was structured for a long time. In the Middle Ages, it was much the same. You would have the majority of the population that were farmers. And there, of course, was a difference between a serf and a free farmer. A serf was tied to the land. They weren't a slave, but they also were, like, they couldn't leave their plot of land. Whether, it didn't matter if the lord switched, it didn't matter if the kingdom switched, they were tied to their farm. However, a serf could, over time, because other than paying their taxes, they didn't really have any other expenses aside from running their farm. They could, over time, amass wealth and buy their way out of serfdom. They could buy their land, buy their farm. They could pay for one of their children to become a page, and in doing so, enter into the warrior class of society. They could send somebody off to apprentice with a blacksmith or with a mason, any of the guilds. And the guild system I'll get into later. But the serf was basically the lowest level of medieval society outside of slaves. But slavery was outlawed by the 9th century. The only people who still practiced it were pagans. So serfs were kind of a way of getting around those anti-slavery laws. But they did have the freedom to move up in society should they amass the amount of wealth. Free peasants, it was much the same thing. You could become a landowner. You could pay for your kids to get into different guilds or into the church. The church you didn't have to pay for. If you wanted to send one of your kids off to become educated and become a monk or a priest or a bishop, you could just send them off. The church wasn't going to charge you for that. And also, up until the High Middle Ages, up until I think the 11th century, if I remember correctly, is when celibacy of the clergy became widespread within the Catholic Church. Becoming a priest didn't necessarily mean that you were going to that your line ended there. It could be that you got married and had kids. And, back then, being a bishop was one of the highest offices you could achieve because you were essentially a governor of a bishopric of a territory that was just under the control of a bishop rather than a secular governor. And if you were before the 11th century, then you could actually continue to have kids and all that. And part of the reason that celibacy of the clergy came about was because people didn't want the church didn't want their priests and their monks and everything becoming hereditary. They didn't want church power to be passed through generations in that way because they were focused on apostolic succession rather than hereditary succession, which makes sense, makes complete sense. But society would be structured that way. So you have serfs and free peasants on the bottom. And then directly above them, you'd have blacksmiths and brewers. And again, the clergy were outside of all of this. So you had three main classes. You had the laborators, the orators, and the bellators. The bellators being from Latin bella, which is war. So those were the warriors. You had the orators, who were the clergy. And then you had the laborators, who were the peasants and the artisans. And artisans, over time, started off kind of as you would just be like the village blacksmith or something like that. But over time, they became more the guild system, wherein you would have three specific levels that you could attain, and those were apprentice, journeyman, and master. To become a journeyman, you had to find a master as an apprentice, and they would train you, and then you would take exams, essentially, to become certified as a journeyman, and the guild would set the rates so that nobody was able to undercut somebody or make things overpriced And then enough time as a journeyman, then you could basically do the same thing as what doctors currently do in the United States, at least, which is where you sit before a board, and a board of masters will determine if you should become a master. This is actually much the same way that Freemasonry works, by the way. Freemasons sprung out of the masonry guilds of the Middle Ages. They absorbed the exact same structure, except they changed the names around. Now it's Entered Apprentice, Fellow Craft, and Master. I know this because I am a master mason. I went through the process myself, and I, having had the medievalist background, it was all very recognizable, which I thought was funny. But yeah, so that's the guild system that came about during the High Middle Ages. It kind of sprung out of the Hanseatic League in Germany. But that was basically how artisanship worked. Although you could have maybe your like village blacksmith wouldn't be part of the smith's guild. But if you were in a city, in a large town, essentially every artisan had to be part of a guild, or they were not allowed to operate because you had to have a guild charter to operate within a city. And these were basically like it's funny. A lot of people look at this period and they're like, oh, that's the origins of capitalism. In reality, this is the origin of labor unions. These are the earliest labor unions, are these guilds. So just a funny little misdirection that gets taught in a lot of high school history courses. Capitalism came after labor unions. People don't know that. I think it's funny. If you're writing fantasy that is, you know, based on the early modern period or the late medieval period, that's one thing to consider is the economics. You know, are you looking, if your guild system should predate more capitalistic ventures. So if your story is centered around that, then you want to have maybe somebody who's dissatisfied with the guilds and the way that they're maintaining prices and protecting certain monopolies and things like that. And maybe you have a character who goes, well, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I want to be independent. Maybe if you got a merchant character like that, a good backstory for a character who's a roving trader or merchant could be that they were part of a guild and the masters wouldn't allow them to become a master and take on an apprentice. So they decided to strike out on their own. You know, that's one way you could look at some of this character development. You know, once you get out of that, there's the Bellator class, the warriors. You would have knights and lords and kings. And of course there's the actual structure of medieval aristocracy, where kind of like the lowest you can be is like an earl or a baron. Those are kind of synonymous. And then above that, you'd have a count who would usually be in charge of a county. That's where the term county comes from. That comes from conte, which is a Latin word. All of these terms come out of Latin, by the way. And then above a count, you would have a duke. And above a duke, you would have a prince or a king or an archduke as you get into kind of later things. Because this is all very general, because there could be other titles between those. And of course, a petty king was lower than a high king, and a high king was lower than an emperor, and an archduke could be above a high king, and weird things like that. But, you know, it's as a rule of thumb, basically goes king at the top, duke, count, earl, baron, and lord could apply to anyone under prince, essentially. Prince just meant that you were part of you were a direct descendant of the king or queen. That, you know, so in the UK, Prince Charles and Prince Harry and Prince William are all direct descendants of Queen Elizabeth. So while there are people in line for the throne who aren't princes, prince applies directly to the royal family, which is why you could not have a prince in, for example, in the United States, you could not have a prince. But in Canada, theoretically, you might be able to pull it off. if you had a prime minister who was the son or the grandson of the ruling monarch of Britain, and why a lot of European countries that still have monarchies today, even if they're just figureheads, still have princes and dukes and whatnot. I do think that the use of once you get out of the royal family, I do think the whole duke and duchess thing in Britain is kind of funny, but that's kind of how things evolved. And then, of course, the rest of it was the clergy, who would be, anything from the Pope down to a deacon or a monk. Usually, and of course, the, we could do an entire episode of this on the monastic system and the church, but it was much the same way. You know, you would start off at the bottom as a deacon, work your way up to being ordained as a priest. After that, you could become a bishop. After becoming a bishop, you could become an archbishop or a cardinal. And after that, you could theoretically maybe work your way up to being the pope. But one of the things that the church in the Western Roman, the Latin side of things, one issue that arose from this system was that after the fall of Rome, the church was essentially the only power structure in Europe that had survived the fall. So they did a phenomenal job of, you know, keeping everything together, but they also had to put bishops into positions of secular authority. And when they did that, they had to make some new rules. And eventually those rules would cause them to come in conflict with the secular monarchs. For example, the investiture controversy between Pope Gregory VII and Henry IV of the Holy Roman Empire, which had to be solved by Henry II of England, had to step in and broker this agreement between the two to ensure that there wasn't all-out war between the Vatican and the Holy Roman Empire. Which was a real threat. And at the time, there really wasn't anybody who could have stepped in to help the church there, because even though the French and the English might have been able to help out the Vatican, the Byzantines likely would have helped out the Holy Roman Empire. So there would have been a full-scale European war that would have gone very poorly, and they decided to resolve it rather than see that kind of war break out. Mm-hmm. But that was, if you were not born into a family where you had the money to have mobility, then your best chance at becoming wealthier, at improving your status, was to either join an army as a peasant and hope to, you know, ransom off a knight or something, or gather your share of the plunder without dying, or you could also join the clergy and become a monk or a deacon and then improve your lot in life that way. So those were kind of the two ways that people got out of being in the laboratory class. But like I said at the beginning, it was all very, much more fluid than people give it credit for. The Middle Ages, if you were born a peasant, you were not stuck a peasant. And it's why these stories of people who are born into a peasant class and yet become these, you know, heroic soldiers and whatnot, those aren't unrealistic. You know, that could happen to somebody. Was it likely? No, but it's not as far-fetched as to be something that is purely fantasy.
One thing I wanted to ask you as well about, I've seen it quite a lot, especially in the televised versions of fantasy, The Witcher, and have you read The Name of the Wind by Patrick
Rothfuss? I have not.
Well, I was just going to ask you about something that features quite heavily in that, and that is minstrels and bards.
Yes.
And the playing of music. We won't go too much into that because I wanted to save that for a different subject. But
sure.
What about this kind of job? Because that is, I suppose, it's a way of getting by in life based on talents. If you can,
yes, sing,
and if you can play, you can strum a lute.
Yes. So one of the most interesting professions people had during the period, because it was not, so today everybody wants to be a rock star, right? When you're a kid, like, you know, being the next Freddie Mercury or the next John Mayer, or like being a musician is a thing that we aspire to as kids. In the medieval period, it absolutely was not. Now, bards and troubadours could make a lot of money. They could live very lavish lifestyles, but the way that you got into that most of the time was a lot of these people were runaways who decided to either run away from an aristocratic family because they didn't want to become a warrior or a priest. You might be a peasant who was sick of your lot in life. You might be a serf who didn't want to be tied to the land anymore. And people would, you know, as younger people, a lot of orphans didn't want to be in orphanages, or, more often than getting sent to a secular orphanage, you would be sent into an abbey or a monastery, and, you know, basically you had to become a monk. So a lot of these people would run away and join these roving bands of troubadours, and they would be taught to sing and play a lute or a drum or a fife, and over time that would become, you know, who they were. And, you know, if you look at like Yaskier in The Witcher, you know, by the time you get to like the second season of the show, not to spoil anything, but you know, he's rather famous. He's a well-known bard and he's popular. They almost treat him like he's a pop star. So that was a real thing that could happen, you know, and you would basically, the lower end of that would go place to place, tavern to tavern, you know, basically taking a coin here and there. Oftentimes they would offer to play for free, at no cost to the owner of the tavern, and only make their money from tips. Because what your goal was to become so well-known by the common folk that, you know, maybe a knight or a merchant passing through town hears of you, and then, you know, they want to have you at their feast, and you eventually could work your way up to being the troubadour of choice for royal courts, and you would have kings and queens paying you a lot of money to travel from court to court playing for their feasts. So was it a common profession? No, but it was certainly, if you preferred that bohemian lifestyle of moving place to place and playing music and all that, you know, it was a great option, and honestly, much better for people back then than, you know, now, because now you've got a modern life. You got to pay rent, and it's kind of, you can't really go from place to place quite as easily. You know, you can live in a van, I guess, but it was a little bit easier back then to just fade into the background.
Yeah,
and the likelihood that you were ever going to pay taxes was also extremely low. So
there's a lot more freedom.
Yeah,
back in the day.
Yaskier is one of my favorite characters in television, simply because it's a very true to form example. It's this charismatic, fun, and talented bard who obviously useless in combat, but at the same time, you know, they do a good job having him serve a function. People would pay bards to write stories of their victories and go sing them all across the land. It was very common for, part of the reason that we have so many songs and poems written down about various monarchs and leaders is because they would hire bards to write of their victories. A very famous one is the bard Iolo Goch from Wales. He was a 14th and 15th century bard and poet, and he was essentially the court bard of Owain Glyndwr. And, you know, we have all of this information about this historical figure who the English really didn't write about because they considered him a scoundrel because of Iolo Goch. And that's easily one of the most important resources we have regarding a lot of medieval figures is the poetry that was written about them. Of course, it's often heavily biased in one direction or the other, but still, you know, very important.
Well, everyone, I hope you've found some inspiration for your stories there. Like, I've just sit here with a little notebook and just write down ideas that come to my mind whenever I talk to you, Aidan. It's just great.
So, happy to be of help.
Yeah, thanks very much. And where can we find out a bit more about you?
You can find me on TikTok, Snapchat, and Instagram at The Aidan Mattis. That's TheAidanMattis. And on YouTube and Patreon at The Lore Lodge.
Nice one. And the TikTok's taken off a bit now. Aidan's got over a million followers.
Yeah. I think this evening I will officially actually hit 1.1 million, which is exciting. But
very exciting. Head over and see what all the joys of history are there. We'll be back in the next episode with a look at what people did with the free time in the medieval period, which is something that doesn't really get discussed an awful lot, would you say?
It really doesn't. And generally when it does, they're wrong.
That's what we'll be doing. We'll be debunking the myths. So yeah, until next time, thanks very much. A big thank you again to Mr. Aidan Mattis for a truly insightful rundown on the jobs people did in the Middle Ages and jobs that feature so prominently in the fantasy genre too. Have you gotten any ideas for your stories after listening to that? Like I said at the end there, my head was swimming with them. Don't forget, you can learn more about Aidan on the Lore Lodge podcast, and you can find that on YouTube. And also, I think you can find Aidan on TikTok too. He's got about 1 million followers, so he must be doing something interesting over there. And that's about all for today. If you enjoyed the episode, please do subscribe and follow. Consider leaving us a quick rating on Spotify, and be sure to reach out and stay connected by joining our writing group. There are pretty much hundreds of us nowadays. We're in Discord. Discord has blown up. It's absolutely great fun chatting with everyone on that. And Facebook, we're on there as well. Like I said, we chat about all things writing, the fantasy genre, helping each other out with beta reads is a really massive bonus to being in the group. And also with reviews and supporting each other on the likes of social media. So it's a really great place to be. And it'd be great if you could join us too. The links for everything are in the description. We'll be back on the 28th of May with more fantasy writing fun. So until then, keep on scribbling.